everybody.
Hey, hello. Howdy. How do you do?
Hey, everybody. This is episode 82 of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
And I've been drinking Monster, man.
We're all
jacked out of our minds.
We're jacked up. My name is Kevin. I'm the most jacked.
Do you even lift? I'm Nick.
Nick is the second most jacked.
I'm Jared. I've had nothing.
Jared's the least jacked.
I'm thirsty.
He got jacked in the parking lot.
He got jacked. Yeah. People learned about it on the news, how to jack his car. So this is episode 82 for the week of... should we say that when we do this?
No.
All right, cool.
For the week you're listening to it.
For the week you're listening to it.
Good. Well done. Week of 2013.
20XX.
20.
What is this, Mega Man?
Yeah, so this is a Big Planet Comics podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Mm-hmm. You can follow our Twitter at Big Planet Comics. You can go on our Facebook and go to our webpage. You can go to our Tumblr, rarely updated.
Oh,
and Google Plus.
And you can check out our Google Plus. That's
our MySpace.
Yep. Come hang out with us in a Google Hangout.
Yep.
Do we have a MySpace page?
We do still.
Wow.
I think.
Leave us good reviews on Yelp.
Our MySpace is like, check out Graham Morrison's new X-Men.
I ordered some Chinese food on Wednesday.
Tell me more.
And the woman, when I called, she was like, somebody left us a bad review on Yelp. Can you please leave me a good review?
Aww.
And she's like, I'm going to send you a business card. And so there was a business card with the Chinese food, and I just had the word Yelp written on it.
Nice.
I should do it. I haven't done it yet.
You should. Is it our favorite Chinese restaurant?
It is. New Beijing Chinese food in Fairfax, Virginia.
Nice. You should send her a business card back saying podcast.
I'm gonna send her like one of those birthday cards that has audio in it, except it's gonna have a clip from this when we drop the name. So what's been going on, you guys?
What has been going on?
That's a good question. That's the one I just asked.
There's a tornado. That was sad.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, what's been going on with you?
Oh, with me. Nothing. Nothing interesting. I've been catching up on Arrested. I've been catching up on Arrested Development because the new season's coming on Netflix on Sunday.
It starts this Sunday. Wait, no, we're giving away when this podcast takes place, which Jared explicitly did not want us to do.
I watched 14 episodes today.
Wow. Today?
Jeez. That's all I did today, pretty much.
This is why we get nothing done at the store.
Well, I wasn't at the store.
Good one.
But that is why we get nothing done at the store.
By the way, the store didn't open.
Well, cool.
Back into an 8-hour sign up.
Cool story.
Yeah. What have you been doing, Kevin?
I don't know. I've been working on I'm writing comics because everybody who works at a comic store feels like they can write comics.
That's true.
But my webcomic started this week.
I was about to say. You actually have product.
I do, kidcobbler.com. Check it out. That's 2 D's, 2 B's.
When did it go up?
It went up on
sometime in the past.
Wednesday, and I'm not going to say the date, but it was just yesterday, and it's fun. Check it out. Drawn by Coleman Engel, friend of the show, and friend of me personally.
Yeah,
luckily.
Who also did? We're not going to review it because it's issue 5. But Coleman did an Adventure Time Fiona and Cake cover this week,
which was really good.
So congratulations.
Check it out.
Fame.
Yep, that's the Adventure Time.
I don't know. All right,
just let it play.
All right, what have you been up to, Jared?
I caught up on the House of Cards TV show with Kevin Spacey.
I heard a funny thing about that show. I heard that show was reverse engineered. So they interviewed a bunch of Netflix users, found out what they liked the best about the TV shows they watched. And then they stuck all of those things in House of Cards.
It totally works.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. Isn't there a British version of it?
There's a British version.
But it's different.
Based on a book.
Huh?
It's totally confusing. It literally really says, confused. Like, based on the book, based on the miniseries.
I heard this on another podcast.
Weird.
Wow.
It's a comedy podcast. But I'm going to assume it's factual. It was a person calling in the podcast to talk about something else, but that's what they said. So
I don't believe it.
Yeah. So how is it? It's good stuff?
It's amazing. I try to watch it as quick as
possible.
Does it
have all the stuff you like in a Netflix show?
Kind of does.
Yeah.
And it's all set in D.C., and they actually, like, shot at least the outside scenes in, like, parts of D.C. you don't normally see. So it's like, oh, like, that's, like, 10 blocks from my house. It's, like, those sort of scenes, as opposed to be, like, here's the Capitol from the mall.
Speaking of that, they've been shooting Captain America in DC.
Oh yeah,
and I keep wanting to like go, but it's always when I'm working. I'm like, go.
Oh. Did they like shut down a bridge or something?
They shut down the Key Bridge into Georgetown.
Really? Oh my god!
Twice. Yeah. Right. Twice. It was only for like half an hour, an hour, but it was like it was Sunday. But
it was on a Sunday. Yeah.
I was like, ugh.
I was like, oh, it's gonna be hard getting to work.
There's but never not traffic here though. So
yeah. And then recently, like a few days ago, they were filming in front of the Air and Space Museum. So
oh, cool.
I was like, I know where that is. I can go there right now.
Should have done it.
I wish
back
I could
in 2 hours.
Dude, there's a dude named Aaron Space.
Yeah, probably.
That dude's cool.
That would be the best.
That dude's cool.
That dude is the coolest.
Speaking of names, I have some news.
My name's Jared.
No.
I changed my name to Smith.
Better
Smithsonian.
That would be awesome. No, but my son is now named Smithson.
Son of museums.
Aaron Myers, longtime friend of the podcast and great promoter and reviewer.
You found the question that he asked a month ago? Okay.
He had a son yesterday.
Oh, congratulations, Aaron Myers.
But what would you name your son if you're a big comic book fan?
Dr. Doom Myers.
Close.
Mike Myers?
Logan Xavier Myers.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's pretty intense.
That's a lot of X-Men stuff.
Congratulations.
Nice.
Congratulations, Logan Xavier.
He probably looks like Professor X right now.
Yeah.
He can't walk. He's got a bald head.
Oh, dear.
All right.
Indeed.
And we're in trouble.
No.
And he's telepathic.
With who? The police.
The police.
The thought
They're listening
police.
To us.
The band, The Police.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, so that's what everybody's been up to, I guess, right?
Yeah. We've been doing stuff.
Well, sounds okay.
Yeah.
I guess it's all right. Let's do some news.
This just a heater-free Wednesdays?
I'll do that one. You can do the second one.
Yeah. All right. So a few weeks ago, we talked about the Avengers 2 movie and how Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch were going to be on it. And I think we explained the weird rule that they have where they can use Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch, but they can't call them mutants and they can't refer to Magneto.
Right. It's all weird stuff with Fox owning or
like the rights to use stuff in movies.
Yeah. Fox or Paramount or whatever owns X-Men and Marvel owns the Avengers.
And so this week they announced that Quicksilver is going to be in X-Men Days of Future Past, which is a little strange. I don't think it's the same actor because I don't think they've even cast Quicksilver for the other movie, but for Avengers. But yeah, it's kind of weird. It's going to be a younger Quicksilver, so I don't know how it's going to work.
Baby Quicksilver.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. I don't know if it's going to be the same actor in like kind of like the same continuity somehow. But if not, it'll be really confusing for people who don't read comics and go see these movies. They'll be like, wait, wasn't this guy in X-Men?
Yeah, I think people are going to be confused. Yeah. But whatever. Also, Avengers beats X-Men.
It's true.
It's true.
Yeah. So I don't know. Is Scarlet Witch going to be in it as well?
I don't know.
That'd be amazing.
That would be really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. So whatever.
Captain America's in it.
Yeah. So I hope that X-Men movie is good. Avengers 2 is definitely going to be good.
Yeah.
Dolphinately.
Dolphinately.
Yeah. So Jared, what is this hater-free Wednesdays thing? You were telling me about this earlier.
It's a new thing I heard about on the Twitter. Their literal quote for their thing is, comic shops are notoriously hit and miss when it comes to being inclusive of women, LGBT people, people of color, and other minority comic fans. And so they started a Tumblr, which is to share your positive or negative comic shop experiences so that fellow comic fans can find friendly local comic shops and be warned of which shops to avoid. So they have a master list of recommendations where people are like, I went to the store and it's awesome. And then they also have they're all like, you just post a review on their Tumblr. And this is the link to it from this long list. But then we'll have like a list to like crappy comic store 23, and it'll have like a strikeout through it. You click on it, it goes to the review, and they'll be like, I'm a girl and I walked in there and they hit on me and like, you know, made fun of the comics I was reading. Or it's like, oh, I'm a gay person. They went in there and they said, you know, no gay people allowed. It's stuff like that. You're like, oh, this is really awkward and these are terrible stores.
That's crazy.
I hope we don't end up on the bad list because then we shouldn't be promoting this Tumblr.
Right, yeah.
Right. But no, they
we're safe. We're safe.
Yeah, they were asking people to do good stuff, and some people like Sam Marks, other friend of the show, gave us a nice review on their website already.
That's cool.
So if you want to, it's just haterfreewednesdays.tumblr.com.
Yeah.
And they're on Twitter, too. But just search
That's crazy.
For
that. Does this exist for other things
Sam Marks,
as well?
A white guy.
It's true. It's true.
It's true.
But do they... Is there a hater-free, like, every other day for, like, grocery stores or, like...
I bet there is.
I think the Wednesdays thing is just because...
Is this just a comic thing?
Yeah, but, like, grocery stores aren't notoriously, like, exclusive of non-certain types of people. Well, they probably used to be, but
right.
Yeah. All right. So interesting. It's interesting. And, a pretty good list of stores on there, but not some of the ones you'd expect. So I think it's just like people saying my local store is good.
Well, this is a new thing, I guess, right?
Yeah. So they just started up. So check them out. They're good people. Yeah.
Tell the world we're not hateful.
Yes. Please say we're not terrible.
Even if we are, just tell them that we're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the only thing we hate is DC Comics.
That's true. And you'll find out more about that later when we review the Green Team, Teen Trillionaires.
Yeah. Spoiler.
Yeah. So speaking of that, should we do some reviews, right?
Yeah. Yes.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
Hey, you guys, it's time for reviews.
Is it? Good to know.
Yeah, so our thing just broke, so if we sound like weirdos. I guess I don't need to tell people when stuff like that happens.
Yeah, God.
I'm like, hey, everything just broke, but now we're back.
Editing, man.
Yeah.
And if you did, like when I did a radio show in college, like the producer for the radio show said, like, people have such a short attention span that they're like, oh, my God, the song stopped and nobody said anything for like 30 seconds. Like, as soon as the song starts playing, like, oh, cool, music. So they said never really talk about your problems. And so, like, the one time I screwed up, of course, I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. But then the producer did his radio show and flubbed it terribly and talked about it for, like, a minute. He's like, I'm so sorry. Oh, my God, what a terrible mistake.
Wait, you did a radio show?
Yeah, can you tell how professional I am on this one?
Do you have recordings?
Oh, I do. I got lots of them.
Yeah, we
got
to hear it.
Yeah. Do you review comics on it?
I do.
Speaking of reviewing comics.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Up first this week, we've got Akinyero number one.
Don't you mean American McGee's?
American McGee's Alice, the Akinyero Madness Returns.
Wait,
no, this is...
Wait, so is that an actual movie that I just never heard
it's
of?
It's a video game. Okay, this comic seems to be based on a video game because there's an ad for it on the back cover.
Yeah.
Yep.
The video game doesn't look great.
Yeah, but it's got a code on the back for a free karma pack, so that's cool.
Yeah, but if you don't want to buy this, but you still want to play the game, the code is You Hack Dead Wolf.
Whoa.
Way to kill our sales, guys.
But this is written by Justin Acklin and drawn by Vasilis Lolos, who I think we're all big fans of.
Yeah.
He drew Pirates of Coney Island and Last Call. And Nick likes him because he's Greek.
He's Greek, and he lives in Athens. Because I went to see him at SPX, and they're like, you just left. I think we're about to Athens. I was like, what?
I will see him when I go home to visit my family.
Besides the connection to video games, I thought that this was a pretty good comic.
Yeah, so this is set in medieval Japan, amped up through the fantasy lens. So they're up in North Japan where the original settlers of the islands, the Ainu people, live. They lead a somewhat more primitive life than the... Japanese people you might be familiar with, and there are thousands of demons running around trying to infiltrate the reality. And
don't
so,
you mean yokai?
Yokai, sorry. So there's a young girl named Connie whose dad is Japanese and her mother is Ainu, and there is a group called the Order of the Red Cloak. What are they called?
It's definitely something like that.
Something like that.
It's definitely something
like
that.
Like the dudes. The Order of Akane, who wear red cloaks. There we go.
There you go.
So basically, they're the ones who, like, whenever demons show up and possess animals or people or whatever, they're the ones who smack them down and get them back under control.
They're the Red Hunters.
Yes. And then through some circumstances, young Kani gets involved with them and sent on a quest, like all great fantasy books.
The easiest way to summarize this is it's Little Red Riding Hood with yokai. I think that sums it up.
it's just like a really basic, like, people invade our village and now I'm gonna go get them.
Yep. Yeah. Except you got Vasilis Lolos drawn this.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like the story in this is not that interesting. I don't know. I felt like the writing was a little long-winded at times. Just setting up
a lot of
stuff.
Exposition.
Yeah, just definitely a lot of exposition. It is the first issue, which is something that happens a lot. But Vasilis Lolos is an awesome, awesome artist, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. And he's really good at drawing monsters.
Yeah, and once it gets into the kind of quest, it starts moving a lot quicker and it's a lot more fun.
Yeah, plus she carries a giant axe.
She does, and there are people with giant hammers. One of them is dressed exactly like Samus from Metroid, which is cool. And all the monster designs are really fun.
Oh my gosh, like the corrupted hares, which have like these giant teeth and huge ears and extra eyeball in the middle of their forehead.
Yeah, and the art's all really, you know, like he renders like emotion and face as well, but then also he's really good at action. So like I think it all works really well.
Right.
And yeah, I'm interested. I'm going to definitely read more issues of this.
Yeah, yeah. All three of them.
Especially going to look at them. Yeah, this is just a three-issue thing, but if this felt like a long issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
But maybe just because there was a lot of text.
There was a lot of text in the beginning. Explaining what the yokai were.
Yeah, but good. A good comic.
Yeah. Awesome. Right. Yeah. Very cool.
All right, up next, we've got The Bounce number one. This is written by Joe Casey, who I always get Joe Casey and Joe Kelly mixed up. Did Joe Casey write I Kill Giants?
Nope, he did Sex, the new one.
Okay.
He writes Sex, and he wrote other stuff.
Yeah.
Deadpool?
Butcher Baker? No, I think it was Joe Kelly.
So, I mean, I literally always get them mixed up. Yeah, I always have it wrong.
Every time on the
podcast. They all came around.
But we're all pretty bad.
Ben 10? Is that Joe Casey?
I don't know. Did Joe Casey work on Ben 10?
I think he did.
Isn't Joe Kelly work on Ben 10?
Maybe Joe Kelly did. But anyway, and the art in this is by David Messina, who I think used to draw the Angel comic for IDW.
Did he?
Yeah, I think so, but I'm not sure about that. Nick, why don't you tell people...
Full of the facts.
Yeah, this is really informative. I am very knowledgeable.
Well, the basic gist of this is that there's a stoner who smokes a lot of weed and is a superhero in his spare time.
And then he just listens to lots of bounce music, right? Like Big Freedia and Mr. Ghetto.
Yeah, definitely Mr. Ghetto.
There's a lot of twerking.
Listen to that Walmart song. Going to the Walmart.
Walla walla world.
Anyway, so yeah, it starts off with him. The first page is him smoking out of a giant bong, and he's talking to his roommate, who tells him he needs to be more responsible. And as they're talking, someone on the news is like, this senator is being held hostage with his family. And, he's like the chief of police or whatever.
Whatever.
And so he's like...
some guy.
Jared just summed up this whole comic.
this guy. Something happens. And then he goes, and there's a supervillain, and the supervillain is surprised to see him, I guess there's not too many heroes or villains in this world.
Well, they both got cool costumes.
And they fight. Bad guy gets away, and then the cops are going to go after him. And then it gets really weird. The thing I didn't like, I kind of like the first half of this. Like, I like the relationship between the two friends, and he was kind of funny as the superhero. But then, like, it gets into this weird thing where it explains a lot of, like, what these villains are doing, and it's not completely clear what they're doing. They're going into a different dimension. Maybe there's brought back something
sort of
from
scheme.
It, some weapon.
Yeah.
And then... it gets really weird, and then it just kind of stops.
Basically, the Bounce does a new drug, and we can't tell if he's gone into a different universe or is dead or something.
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
He jumps into a more sci-fi universe at the end.
Oh, well, that sounds more interesting than the part I read.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's like literally the last page.
Well, I thought there was a lot of cool ideas. There's like a drug dealer who's basically this guy who just... creates a fog that comes out of him and like gets people like really
stoned. He turns into a fog. So
yeah,
he is literally a drug.
Yeah, he goes like into people's nostrils and gets them really, really high. And maybe they're either tripping or going to other dimensions. It's not quite clear because that's kind of like cliffhanger, spoiler alert. But I thought it was pretty good. I didn't love it, but I liked it enough. The art's a little better at the beginning, and then it gets a little more rough as it goes along.
And then the end's kind of good again when it gets weirder.
Yeah, and it's weird.
So
it's a little uneven.
Like he got more excited when he has more fun stuff to draw, like the weird trip.
Yeah,
transition scene at the end is really cool.
It's just a little uneven, but
this guy's bong is huge. Like, why would you need a bong that big?
I've seen bigger. And I always ask that same question.
Because you can.
And I've seen one broken. Because they're like, why do you have this giant bong?
Oh, nothing's sadder than a hippie whose bong gets broken.
Oh, man, I just spent $300 on this. I'm like, you are an idiot.
You're supposed to put ice in it, man.
Anyway, about bongs. Yeah, it's all right. It's I didn't love it. I really like Sex, and I thought this would be kind of sexy.
That's the problem with that book.
I thought this would be sexy. No, you know, it's all right. I didn't love it, but I'll read the second one and see if it gets a little more clearer.
I think that's what we got. Check out second issue, see how it goes.
Yeah. This review section is kind of a mess right now, I feel like. But now we're going to move on to something that was a little easier to explain and fun.
Yes.
Yeah. So up next, we've got The Deep Sea. This is written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, who write, they've written Jonah Hex. They wrote All-Star Western. Then they wrote some other things like Battle for Bloodhaven.
Some other Western things.
Yeah. But their Western stuff is usually the best, I think, when they work with Amanda Connor. But in this, they're working with Tony Akins, who I think is a really good artist. He's kind of been the fill-in artist on Wonder Woman, and I actually like his issues a lot.
Yeah. He's great on it.
Yeah. And The Deep Sea is basically, it's a This is a one shot, I should say, but it feels like a first issue of hopefully some more stuff.
Yeah,
this is another one from Dark Horse Presents, right?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. So this follows a guy named Paul, and basically it almost starts out like the beginning of Titanic, where they're like bringing like the lone survivor of the Titanic to check out the wreckage or whatever.
Yeah.
So they're taking him to this place to kind of look at the wreckage of this this old expedition that he was on with a bunch of his friends and like his you know his wife or girlfriend at the time as well. And then it goes into a flashback sort of showing, you know, what happened back then. And basically there was this undersea expedition, and the people, when they were underwater, encountered some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And
they
all kind of passed out and woke up 50 years later.
Yeah, but except that Paul, like, he breaks his leg right before the mission. They're basically diving into the Marianas Trench.
Yeah, so
he stays above, and everyone thinks they die. Like, they'll lose all contact, and, you know, this is like 55 years later,
right?
And so now he's this old man, and yet...
Yeah, and but then it seems like these people returning, they've also sort of brought something with them. Yeah.
And they're all exactly the same age, and it's like, we were down for like a few hours.
It was like a day. And then things get even worse.
Yeah, and I kind of don't want to give away exactly what happens, because that's kind of
crazy.
Yeah, because it's crazy. But I will say it's nuts.
It gets a lot bigger by the end. By the end, it's like a massive world-spanning story.
Yeah.
Which I hope gets continued, because it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, because the end's really exciting, and they've definitely set up, places for the story to go.
Yep.
Yeah, and I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And Tony Aiken's art is great in this.
It's really loose. At times, it almost reminds me of like Joe Kubert or something.
Right.
And at times, it's, you know, it looks like Chris Burnham or Frank Quitely or something. It's cool.
And got a little like Arthur Adams in like his people, not like the detail of
definitely in his faces and stuff. But the whole thing was fun, and I do hope
that there's to draw some cool stuff.
I do hope there's more of this, and it was just a good issue.
I don't know. It was just great.
It reminded me of Atlantis, the Disney movie.
Maybe of there was a DC comic a long time ago that was about like deep sea explorers.
Challengers of the Unknown? Sea Devils or something?
Yeah, maybe. Something
Sea
like
Devils?
That.
It was
sweet.
Speaking of DC comics.
Yeah.
Up next, we've got the Green Team, Teen Trillionaires.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing more appealing to people than rich kids.
Well, this is the sister book to the
movement. Favorite, The Movement. So this is written by Al Baltazar and Franco, which is interesting, because they're the guys that wrote Tiny Titans and Superman Family Adventures. Right. And the art is by Iguara, who's done stuff.
He drew like Firestorm recently.
And the art's not bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. The comic itself didn't really do it for me.
Well, the thing that someone told me today is that there was a DC comic in the 70s called Green Team Millionaires. And so obviously they have gotten younger and much, much richer.
Yeah, you know, you got to adjust for inflation. Yeah. Does anybody want to tell people what Green Team is about?
Take it away.
You don't have to if you don't want to.
No. So Green Team is about this kind of rich kid. He's not like your typical spoiled rich kid, but he's trying to, you know... He's bored and he wants to have a, like, adventure. And so he goes to these, he's really into science, and he goes to these like underground science fairs that pop up from time to time. And there he meets this other like super rich kid.
Are you talking about the main character?
Yeah.
Because this is his first time going to one of these.
Oh, this
things.
Is his first time?
Yeah, going to the Poxpo.
Yeah, it's like these pop up science expos, and his dad doesn't know about it because his dad wouldn't want him to. That wants him to focus on the business, and he sneaks into there and meets the other rich kid who buys all this science stuff. And
oh, you talking about Commodore?
Yeah, his name is Commodore Murphy. And he meets this other girl who's like another rich kid. It's a bunch of rich kids basically meet each other.
All the kids.
And one of the experiments that they're looking at goes wrong, and
then supervillains show up.
Then some crazy supervillains show up. And
the guy left the GPS on.
And the main thing is that Commodore is like trying to basically buy.
Oh, you mean Commodore Murphy?
Yeah. He's trying to buy himself some superpowers, which is the basic kind of, I think, the main part of the story. And crazy science-y things happen, and they use like the different experiments to fight these supervillains. And
cool.
Then something crazy happens at the end, and it stops.
Let's talk about why it's bad.
It's not that bad.
I kind of like the characters. Like, it's all kind of ridiculous, but like I like the main character a lot, actually.
You like Commodore?
No.
Commodore Murphy?
No.
Kind of like Commodore Murphy?
You do?
I don't know.
Nick does.
I like him because he gets crunk off the science.
He does. He says that.
Crunk, what does that mean? Oh, it means crazy drunk.
Oh, yeah. They did explain that.
Yeah.
That does happen.
That happened,
everybody. It's going to be mad awesome. They do say that as well. Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't get into this. I have an aversion to rich kids, I think. So, except why I love YN rich kids, of course, who's saying hot Cheetos and Takis.
True.
But yeah, I find it really hard to be interested in what happens to a bunch of little spoiled rich kids.
It's definitely hard to relate to any of these characters.
Yeah,
because they're like trillionaires.
I definitely wanted the supervillain to kill all of them.
Wow. That's why I don't like Bruce Wayne.
It's weird that this is kind of the sister book to The Movement. I would have thought maybe.
Well, The Movement's about like poor people.
Yeah, but I thought maybe it would have been connected a little bit more.
Oh, like, yeah. Maybe eventually.
Yeah.
But, I'm sure they'll come head-to-head in some.
Yeah, I mean, if they last long enough.
I believe someone online said, green team, the teen trillionaires, I will bet $1 trillion it does not get to issue 10. It's like, that's how much I'll
does
bet.
Does it still have a new 52 on the front of it?
Yeah.
Does it really?
Yeah. Wow. Where?
They still use it. Right new there. 52.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
The new 52, 2 years later, and 18 titles less.
Well, it'll be the new 52 soon.
Yeah, fourth generation.
But anyway.
Anyway, yeah. I mean, don't listen to me about this. Maybe
they should have called the dude Commodore 52.
Well, the one girl's like, "Hey, what's up, 64?" And he's like, "My name's Commodore Murphy."
Kevin, love this.
I'm
book.
Getting crunk.
There's also a baby leopard in this. Or is it a cheetah?
I think it may be a cheetah. I don't know.
I can't tell. It's drawn a little weird.
That's on the cover. Is that actually in the comic?
Yeah, yeah.
I totally missed that.
Yeah, it's in the comic. Like
we were talking more trash about this before we even started this podcast.
Bubbles.
Yeah, and
tag green team.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird art choices. There's one part like we were talking about where they walk into the like the pop-up science expo and they're like, "Wow, this is amazing!
Behold all these wonders!"
But the camera is like facing like them,
so
like the viewpoint is of them walking in, and on the sides you see parts of the expo. It's not like from behind them and them like seeing all this amazing,
or even
things.
From above, from far away, or something like it's just,
right.
It's some weird stuff like that in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, whatever.
It's all right.
It's, yeah, sure. Anyway. Usually we try to be pretty positive, but I'm not going to pretend on this one. Up next, we have a book called Half Past Danger. This is by Stephen Mooney, written and drawn by Stephen Mooney.
Yep.
And this is a book that I would say is heavily influenced by is it called The War That Time Forgot?
Yep.
Yeah.
Or Neozoic.
Yeah, but... Yeah, Jared, what did you think of this?
Dames, Dinosaurs, Danger. Summer, 1943.
Those are all Jared's middle name.
That's true.
Jared Dames. Dame Jared Dinosaurs Smith.
Yeah, right. I got promoted.
You're a dame now. But this was, Jared, this seemed like right up your alley.
It was.
Two-fisted alley.
It was. Oh, my God. I loved it. So there's a American patrol running around in some little Pacific island in 1943. And but strangely, they run across the Nazis who are not in the Pacific so much. And they find a Nazi camp and with some cool Nazi secret weapons. And they're like, "Let's get out of here." And then they're like, "Oh, and over this hill are dinosaurs." So, yeah, it's a nice mashup of, I don't know, Jurassic Park nonsense.
Jurassic Park. It's exactly like Jurassic
it's
Park.
It's exactly like Jurassic Park. Jeff Goldblum is in it.
Yeah. More people getting eaten. And then at the end, you kind of get a Captain America type showing up and some hints of spies. And
possibly a ninja?
Yeah. Oh, based on the front cover where there's a ninja. Oh, I just noticed in camouflage.
A camo ninja?
Yeah, so the cover here has got a burning Nazi flag.
Don't forget the dame.
I'm getting there. Our main hero in a very Indiana Jones look, but with a Tommy gun. A dinosaur skull, a dame smoking with a nice cigarette in one of those long holders.
It's interesting you say Captain America because the woman that shows up with him also is British and looks like the British woman from Captain America.
Right.
Yeah.
And then a ninja in a camouflage ninja outfit and a bunch of Nazi like planes and tanks.
Yeah, and this kind of follows survivor of the crazy stuff that happens, and then it jumps forward a little bit, and
like 2 months later, him. Yeah,
the mission obviously goes terribly wrong because they're dinosaurs.
Staff Sergeant Tommy Irish Flynn. I feel like if your name's Tommy Flynn, the Irish thing is pretty superfluous.
Yeah, the military is not as that creative.
This was fun though. It was very pulpy, very silly.
Yeah, it's got kind of a lot of characters that seem like other characters. Like we said, there's a Captain America type character. There's a Kato type character who shows up.
But it was just very light and like it was, you know, it didn't bother me. Like I just had fun reading
it.
It
felt in the, kind of in the same zone as like a Rocketeer comic.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe not as like not as like whip smart as something like the Rocketeer stuff.
Yeah. But it's a little darker, but.
Yeah, but still fun. I enjoyed it. I'll be curious to see where it goes because it just seems to be embracing the goofiness.
Yeah, just going for it.
And I can appreciate that.
There you go.
All right, up next we have a real talk about goofy book, My Dumb Dirty Eyes by Lisa Hannawalt. This is just basically going to be us all talking about what our favorite parts of this book are.
Jesus Christ.
We were all laughing out loud reading this.
There was one part where I just could not stop laughing.
Which
like
part?
For a good.
Okay, well, hold
on. Let's explain a little.
Yeah, yeah. So Lisa Hannawalt is she's a sort of an independent cartoonist, and she does a lot of stuff in magazines. Like she does stuff in the New Yorker. She does a lot of stuff in the Believer, the McSweeney's magazine, and then she does a lot of stuff that she just posts on the internet on Tumblr, and she does like humor stuff and weird illustrations. And
she drew me a picture of a naked humanoid Garfield.
Yeah, she also
the category of this on the back is comics, graphic novels, boobs.
And I think that sums it up pretty well. And but basically, what she is a humorist, and her stuff is really funny,
hilarious.
So there are a few different kinds of things in this. Some are just
without cracking up.
Like, most of it is really funny, but some of it's just like abstract, weird like stories.
Yeah, they're all shorts. Like some of these are one pagers, and some at most are like 8 pages long. So it's a big variety of stuff.
And I think the longer stuff is really what stands out in this.
Yeah.
There are quite a few movie reviews.
Right.
Which is literally Lisa Hannawalt going to a movie and scribbling notes and like just doodling stuff as fast as she can, and more like her own experience being there than about the film.
Like the funniest picture of Channing Tatum you've ever seen in your entire life. She reviews. War Horse and Rise of the Planet of the Apes,
and Drive,
and a couple other things.
The Bachelor,
The
Vow,
and The Vow. But they're all just really funny. She always has hilarious things to say about them, and I don't know. It's what would you say is like a thing that sums up the humor in this? I mean, there is a picture of Ryan Gosling being so cool that he has 246 toothpicks in his mouth.
So the reviews are like, basically she'll take notes during movies, and I guess she'll probably do this stuff after.
I don't know.
The hero scale from heroic to stoic to autistic is like really funny.
Oh, God.
But then like, cause she'll take a lot of notes, and it'll be like, the one that cracked me up is the part where she's like, she's talking about Rise of the Planet of the Apes. She's like, Caesar has just learned sign language, and it's making the audience go, ah. Well, before this, she was talking about how she hates apes and monkeys. And then she said, but most of his gestures just look obscene. And then it has like pictures of Caesar doing obscene gestures, but it's like, I want ice cream, or like, I want a grape, I want a banana, but they're all like super obscene gestures. It's really funny. That part, just the drawings of the chimpanzee doing these gestures cracked me. I don't know why, but I was just like laughing for like a good 10 minutes.
Or in her review of War Horse, there's like a picture of an ideal War Horse, which has like machine guns strapped to the side of it. And then under that is a picture of a peace pony, which is just like a goofy pony. I don't know.
But that'll be like a side thing of like, she's like, oh, I love horses so much. And she's just talking about, she's like, sometimes when I'm jogging, I pretend I'm a horse. And then if I'm really in the groove, I make quiet, rhythmic clicking noises to myself. So I'm also the writer. I'm writing myself. And then she draws it. It's herself with like a saddle on her back and herself also riding on a saddle. Underneath it says, why did I draw this?
That's so good.
But then one page will just be a picture of a dove dressed like Prince, and it says, when doves cry, under it.
Yeah.
And then North American wildlife and hats, which is all like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's,
I can't even describe it. They're just
you
so
can tell
visually
that she,
hilarious.
She loves drawing animals, and she loves drawing them with like really weird things on them.
And she used to actually draw that type of stuff a lot more. Oh, really? And then she moved into doing more of these reviews and stuff. It used to be a lot of like people with cat heads and horse heads. And
there's a lot of that,
like,
in here too.
Yeah, yeah.
You rule Tumblr by doing this sort of stuff.
Yeah, but yeah,
she's super clever.
The book's really funny. You can tell that she has a lot of fun doing it. Like, you know, it just comes across. There's like a lot of we're just like showing each other things in the book that are really funny.
Oh god.
Yeah, so but I would say definitely check this out.
It's not for kids.
It's definitely not for
super,
kids.
Super, super profane. But yeah, hilarious.
Graphic.
This would have been one of the 56 comics that would have been pulled from Comixology.
Oh, we didn't talk about that in the news.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next time. But yeah, anyway. My Dumb Dirty Eyes. Hilarious.
Yes.
And the art's actually really, really good, too. We should say that.
Yeah.
She's a great artist. Incredible. And her characters are really funny, too. And yeah, yeah. It's good stuff. All right. Totally switching gears with a new book from Taiyo Matsumoto.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. This is the guy that wrote and drew Tekken Concrete, Blue Spring, Go-Go Monster. Well, Black and White is Tekken Concrete. Yeah. And a bunch of other stuff. Number 5, which never finished here, which is a shame.
Ugh,
but
ridiculous.
This is Sunny Volume 1, by the way.
This is Sunny Volume 1, which is exciting because this book was really good.
Yeah, this was interesting because it said it's, you know, like a typical 200-page book, but it's like 6 chapters, and each chapter was like ran each month in a Japanese, you know, magazine or whatever. And I just think it's a cool format for it. It's basically a kind of like abandoned kids orphanage, like foster home combination in Japan. And it's actually set in the 70s, or just a lot of 70s references. Do you guys know?
I think it's set in the 70s or early 80s, maybe.
That makes sense. Because there's a lot of, like, we're listening to, you know, this pop song. They have like a little footnote. It's like, this is the most popular pop song in 1973. But basically, it's just a character study of a new kid whose mom has to leave him at this home. And just, like, him trying to fit in with the other kids and, like, starting to get to know them. And, like, there's, like, an abandoned car out in the field in front of the house. And that's, like, where they all go to imagine they're driving a car as a race car.
Well, and that's what Sunny is. Sunny is the car.
The type of car it is. But it's just, like, their conversations and them growing up and, like, you know, the adventures they go on. And, like, the grandson of the homeowner comes to visit and just is like the cool older kid, and they're all trying to impress him and adventures they have, but then also like talking about how, you know, they miss their parents. And
yeah, the main, I feel like the main three are like, there's White.
Yeah, he's like kind of a cool ruffian kid
of Tekken Concrete, because he's just got that one word name. That's a color. But yeah. And then there's what is the kid with that, the crazy afro's name?
It's hard to remember.
Yeah, yeah.
His nose is always running.
And then the new kid. And they each have kind of different reactions to their situation. Like White is like, has accepted it. And he's just like, whatever, our parents don't want us anymore. And what is his name again? I forgot it already.
Say's the new kid.
The other kid wants, he thinks his mom's going to come see him. And he's like excited. And he doesn't believe that his mom abandoned him. And then the new kid is like, what am I doing here? I shouldn't be here. Like,
yeah, well, some
I'm
of it,
not an orphan. Like,
you slowly start to find out that, like, some do, like, they still have parents who can come to visit, but they're only allowed to visit, like, 3 or 4 times a year. So it's clear, like, they couldn't
raise they're, like,
these kids.
They're taken
so
away from their
like,
parents for one reason or another.
So,
yeah, it's just kind of like, just them, their everyday life and kind of the crazy things that happen to them. And I don't know. It's cool. I wouldn't say there's a big story, other than the kind of coming of age of these boys. It's still the first volume, so, you know, there's a lot to go.
Yeah, and then there's like there's Taro, who's this big overgrown kid who's, you know, slightly slow, I guess, compared to the other kids, who just like, you know, sings "Row Row Your Boat" and kind of plays with the other kids and does his own thing. And but, you know, then they'll have like friends over and they're like, "Hey, let's all play sumo," and they all run out in the yard and have a sumo match and just.
Yeah, it's just various adventures.
Yeah, but just like the characterization, it's such a slow burn. It's like almost nothing really happens. It's just like living life and developing these characters up, and they're like, I thought it was great.
Yeah, so. It hits on a lot of themes that Taiyo Matsumoto like uses in his other works, like in Tekken Concrete, the two kids are also orphans, yeah. And I think Taiyo Matsumoto spent part of his childhood in an orphanage.
Oh, really?
Which would explain why that kind of is a theme that runs through his books. And I feel like also the idea of being a child in an adult's world is definitely something that that runs through a lot of his books as well. Like I'd say in this and Tekken Concrete and Go-Go Monster as well.
Yeah.
And he's great at it. It just always feels so authentic, I feel like. Everything, the language people use, and just like the weird little asides and stuff, you know, or just like the sort of jealousy between children and the kind of dynamics of being young. I thought it was pretty great.
Yeah, I think like it all kind of builds up at least to the sixth chapter in this, the end of the last chapter in this book is like Shosuke, who's like one of the littlest kids, is like convinced he can find four leaf clovers, like it'll be a good present to give his mom, and just wanders off trying to find them, and like everyone begins to panic, and you like, what is going to happen? This little kid is lost in a city, and it's just, you know, it's just, it switches gears, not switches gears, but just like has so many different tones.
It's just so well done that you get so connected to these characters.
Yeah,
when something like that happens, you start freaking out. You're like, oh my God, this little kid is going to like,
that was a rough chapter.
And his art, I mean, his art's a little hard to explain. It looks like Taiyo Matsumoto. If you've ever seen the movie Tekken Concrete, I feel like they do a pretty good job of representing it in animation. But
it's like a mix of like watercolors to do shading, and then like very scratchy pencils.
He's somewhere between your kind of normal manga style and like an American, I don't know. It's all sorts of mixture.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely see some Western influence on his stuff. I mean, of course, there's a huge amount of Japanese influence as well. But the people I would compare it to are people that like are also obscure, like Sam Heady is very similar, I'd say, but wouldn't be like an influence. I'm sure he's very influenced by Alex Toth.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
We always put art up on the page, so definitely
check
that out. But
it's good.
Yeah, it's a very good book. And we've got one more also really, really good book this week. This is The Property by Rutu Modan, who also wrote Exit Wounds, which is another great book. Wrote and drew both of these.
Yeah.
And they're both set in Israel. This one's set in Poland.
Yeah, Rutu Modan's part of the Israeli comics collective Actus Tragicus. There's like five like comic book artists / playwrights. You know, it's like,
and she's the one that kind of I think really broke out.
She
and
has exploded. Yeah. I think with Exit Wounds, really, that was kind of her book that put her on everyone's map. But this one literally starts on a flight. Right before a flight, when they're in Israeli airport about to fly out, and it's a young woman and her grandmother.
Yeah, the two main characters are Micah is the woman
is the
and her
daughter,
and her grandmother, and her grandmother Regina, right? Yeah.
And you instantly see that just like the grandmother is just like this stubborn character, is like where they have to go through the security line and like you can't take your water, and she's like just arguing the whole time until she finally insists that she just starts drinking a little, and this holds up the entire security line while she finishes off the water. And then they fly off to Poland, where the grandmother's was born, but moved to Palestine before World War II and has not been back since.
Yep.
So in a lot of ways, this is just like...
Like right before the war.
Right. This is like a return to like a place she doesn't really know much about anymore and has changed so much. And the reason for it is that their home before they moved, she has the property rights, hence the title, The Property. And she's going back to reclaim...
Or at least that's what she tells her granddaughter the reason is.
And very soon, then they run into like a sort of like distant family friend on the flight who's very obnoxious, and he like attaches them to himself to their like thing. I'll help you out. I speak Polish really well. And very quickly you realize that everyone is kind of has ulterior motives or is like not really saying what they want to do on this trip. And it slowly builds up like the flashbacks to like the grandmother's childhood and why she really left Poland in the first place and what the granddaughter thinks they're there for, and like this guy who's like hanging out with him all the time, why he's on this flight and what he's really doing. And then Mika runs into like this cool Polish guy who's like a tour guide.
He's
and
a comics artist.
Right. Well, you find that out later that he's also a comics artist. Right. And so there's like all these layers of what people are really doing and stuff. But the story is so good. Like, I'm just hinting at the very beginning. There's like layers on layers as they slowly unwrap everything that's happening. And
yeah, and everybody is a genuine person. Like,
right.
You don't feel like any of these people are caricatures or at all.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
They seem like very real.
It's interesting just about the plot. It almost reminds me of like an Alfred Hitchcock story,
yes.
But instead of being about sort of MacGuffins and like the like sort of action and mystery, it's like all that sort of complex stuff that you get in a Hitchcock story of ulterior motives and you
right.
know people's like hidden agendas.
Yeah, but it's more about
mixed
emotions.
Into a very emotionally and emotional and personal story.
Yeah, where you don't know, like literally like the grandmother just kind of has an emotional moment. And, like, literally Mika's about to go and to take a shower, and so she's, like, wearing a towel, and she storms into the hotel bathroom and locks her, the grandmother does, and locks herself in there overnight.
Yeah.
So that, like, poor Mika has to sleep in this towel with none of her clothes, and it's just, like, but you don't know why it's happening, and, like, it's slowly, like, that little
there's
steps
so many
and
like,
clues unwrapping everything.
It's really funny at times, and a lot of times it's, like, super poignant.
Yeah, it could be a very touching book. There are definitely a few moments in this where...
There's one moment that was great. There's a part where they're, what do you call this thing they're looking into?
It's like a cyclotron.
It's like, photographicon or something
yeah.
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and it's like this
plasticon
old, this old
like.
Machine that,
it's basically like a giant Viewmaster.
Yeah, and it's kind of like one of the only things that are, that's still around from her past. And it brings a connection to somebody else and, I don't know, it connects to her past and it's just, yeah, it's pretty,
yeah,
it's a pretty heartbreaking scene.
Yeah.
But also, like, kind of hopeful. I don't know. It's great. This is the whole thing is about, like, her, you know, this everybody she knows is dead because of the war and it, how much things have changed. But I don't know. It's hard to explain that.
Yeah, and all the characters are interesting. It's like even when you think it's black and white, like you know, a character will surprise you with something.
Yeah.
Whether you think they're a really good person and then they end up not being as you know, perfectly good as you think they are, or you think they're just like a bad guy, but then they
and
end
there's
up
so much more going on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, complex. You know, yeah. It just the whole thing really rings true in a way that I found, you know, very like.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like I connected with this book
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. Like, we're describing this terribly because it's...
No, I don't think so because...
Are we, okay, because it's awesome, but I don't want to give so much away. It's
yeah, like, well, I think, yeah. I mean, I think we... Yeah, I, we should
yeah,
talk
we didn't
about
give the... away any of the really big stuff.
No, yeah.
There's a lot of really big stuff that we did not talk about.
Yeah.
Let's just say on page 20, this is kind of where I first realized that so much was going to happen in this, that upon arriving in the hotel, the grandmother just picks up the local phone book and just flips through it. And just see something, and her eyes just get like so wide. She's just shocked.
Yeah, and she's like, "Let's leave. Let's get
out
of here."
And like suddenly, she doesn't even want to be in the country anymore.
And that kind of like, sets up all the mystery.
So it's just like that, this constant layering of new things and events and emotions. And
well, and Modane's really good at sort of getting all that stuff across, which is cool because she has a very, you know, it's done in a clear line style, very obviously influenced by people like Hergé and
yep.
and Ysuwarda and all the sort of European clear line artists.
Yeah.
But she manages to sort of imbue it with a lot of emotion as well.
Yep.
And you never feel like the art is not up to the task.
Right.
Like it always feels, you know, it is cartoony, but it's not cartoonish. I don't
yeah,
know if
right,
that makes
right.
sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But and it's just really well done. She's really great at drawing locations and backgrounds and things
right.
like that.
And the emotions on people's faces, which is so important to the story, is so well done.
Yeah, and
it's just great.
It's just great.
It's one of the best books I've read this year. So
yeah, far. I think that's true as well. I'm really surprised that Sunny was not my favorite book that came out this
right.
week.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But but this book is fantastic. And Exit Wounds is great too. It's before we
yeah,
started the podcast,
right.
but
yeah.
but it's also great in a lot of the same ways. So definitely go back and check that out as well.
Yes,
and
our highest recommendation.
Our highest recommendation.
Yes.
So that's it for this week.
That's it.
Yep. A lot of good
just
comics.
Just those so. Amazing
just,
books.
Just those. Yeah, we just. Definitely ended on a couple high notes. Lots of poop and fart jokes in the Lisa Hannawalt book. And lots of amazing human interactions. And yeah.
Yeah,
so that's it for this week.
That's it.
Yep. We'll see you guys next time.
Yeah.